You're listening to New Age Hipster Radio, home of spiritual rambles and high-vibe convos. Always dogma-free and a totally cool place to be. You can head to newagehipster.co for more spiritual awesome sauce, but for now, here's your host, Bix.
Hey, gorgeous souls, and welcome to another episode of New Age Hipster Radio. Today, we have a special guest. We have Taylor Johnson here with us today. Taylor is an artist, a writer, and comic creator. She is also a longtime cartomancy enthusiast and is the author and artist behind the Millennial Mystic Tarot, which is, I love that deck, the Hecate Oracle, and most recently, the Path of the Magdalene Oracle, which is amazing. And there is a review that I've done over on YouTube if you want to see the deck, because it's incredible. We're going to talk all about that in a minute anyway. Combining contemporary illustrative styles and diverse imagery with time-honored traditions and divination, Taylor's art seeks to honor shared experiences and human connection around the world and across time. Oh, I love that bio. So welcome, Taylor.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi.
Oh my gosh. I'm really excited. I'm really nervous. And it helps me to say that because I found it helps me to say that if I say that up front. So yeah, thank you for having me on the podcast. It's really exciting.
I'm so excited to have you here because we've known each other for quite a long time. We've been in communities together, in circles together, and I've been following your work, your art, your decks for a long time. So it's really... It's really great to have you here and we can connect. We can have a chat and a catch up, but we can also, you know, share it with everyone else. So could you begin by just telling us a little bit about your origin story? This is something I ask pretty much everybody on the podcast. I love to know people's stories. I love to know how you got into all of this stuff. You know, like how did you get on the path? How did you get interested in oracles and all the stuff that you're interested in?
Yeah, so how I wound up in all of this wonderfulness, honestly, I don't remember not being in all of this in some ways. When I was young, I came across tarot and oracle reading in a few like media forms in kind of quick succession. I think within a year or so, I saw it in an anime called Cardcaptor Sakura that I loved when I was like a tween. There was always Miss Cleo commercials on the TV, which I don't know if the rest of the world had that, but that was definitely always like just in my view on the TV. And then there was also a book series in which the two characters kind of exchanged postcards, and at some point one of them goes to like a flea market with her postcard stack from this mysterious guy, and the person she's shopping at this booth reads the postcards like tarot cards. And that was the first time I remember I read tarot in media, and I loved this book series, and I just was like, what is this? But at the same time, it all felt really familiar and it all made sense to me. And I really feel I've always had the idea of divination somewhere in my psyche, in my soul, wherever. I've had some kind of like latent consciousness that this is a thing that would work. And that you could do. And as soon as I encountered it in like actually out in the world here, I was really interested. I think I'm trying to remember like exactly when everything happened, but when I was maybe 10 or 11, and we were talking about this just before before you hit record, I decided to print an oracle deck. I didn't know what an oracle deck was, but I was going to print up these cards. And we had, back in the day, we had clip art, which in that instance, it was a stack of CDs that I could put in the computer and find images that I could use. And I stuck them all on some rectangles in Microsoft Word and printed them. And got in a bit of trouble for using up the entire cartridge of printer ink, but I had my first Oracle deck and I used that thing. I got my first tarot deck when I was maybe 12. My mom let me buy it at Barnes & Noble. I still have that somewhere and thought I'd lost it for a while, but it made its way back to me. And yeah, so I guess tarot and oracle reading was the doorway in. And I just kind of went straight to the bookstore and the library, as one did before the internet was quite as big as it is now. And I know I checked out every book they had at my local library in the little, like, I think it was like the metaphysical new age section was how they labeled it. And like usually metaphysical. And I was always really confused, like, what does this even mean? But this is all the stuff I want to read. So like dove through library, went to the witchy section at the bookstores, and kind of just have not stopped turning pages and reading cards since. There's been a lot more to the story, but that's kind of the stumble upon.
Mm. Yeah, okay, so I've got a couple of questions I need to ask.
Sure, please.
Based on that. Number one, this Oracle deck that you created with these like old school images. Does it still exist?
Oh.
B, can we get a copy of it?
It does not that I know of. And, you know, I recently moved out of my childhood home, like they sold the house. We moved everything out. And I discovered lots of cool artifacts, but that deck was not among them. Sadly, I do have somewhere my homemade deck of Clow cards from Cardcaptor Sakura that I couldn't buy a replica. I was 9 or 10, so I made my own. I have those somewhere, but I have some early oracles, but they're much later than the clip art oracle. I wish I had it though, because it's such a like little bit of history that if I ever find it, it's going on the Instagram, definitely.
Yeah. I'm here for it. I wonder if you could recreate it.
That would be an interesting puzzle. It was kind of like an animal guides type thing. I had found a set of images that were all different animals from around the world, but all in one artistic style. Mm. And I thought, like, oh, I love the cohesiveness of this. This would make a great deck. And I think the fact that my brain went there immediately, like, let's turn this into an Oracle deck, just kind of like foreshadowing of what was to come eventually.
That's so interesting. Okay, more questions. So what was your first tarot deck? What was that first deck that you got?
Okay, first one, it's kind of completely out of print now. It was known as the Barnes & Noble tarot because it was in their, like, they had a section of kits where you would get, you know, a little item and a book about how to use it. And they had everything from, you know, I don't even know what else they had, but I got the tarot kit. And it's not a well-known deck. The next one I got after that was the Lord of the Rings tarot because I am that generation. And that was also one of the only ones they had at the Borders. Cause I went for every bookstore I could find, and just checked for what tarot do they have. and then there's been a lot since then.
Yeah. Starts with one, then it's two, and then it's like, I now have a massive collection.
Yeah, there's a box in the other room. It's like kind of, it's great though. Like I'm here for just the possibility of there being so many decks. I mean, it's kind of like you can look at it a lot of different ways, but I love that there's more than there were when I was starting, because I think I would go and there would be maybe like one angel card deck and two tarot decks, and that was the whole bookstore's worth of decks. And you know, it's just fun to be able to find more now.
Yeah, I remember those days too, where when I bought my first tarot deck, I was looking in this witchy shop, like the local witchy shop to me, because that's how you bought your decks, right? Back in the
right,
day.
Right.
You didn't just go on Amazon and look at like 5,000 tarot decks to choose from.
Right.
And I think there was in that shop, there was like three tarot decks, and I agonized over which one to get for like weeks.
Oh yeah.
Months.
Oh my gosh.
Just out of three decks.
I'm impressed that you considered more than like, I just kind of grabbed whatever was on the shelf that week and yeah. I'm gonna go see how this one is.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. So
it's so interesting. I love to hear people's stories about how they found their first deck.
Oh yeah.
There's something about it that's kind of like, you know, this is the like this point in the story of like, okay, where is it gonna take you?
Yeah, it's like in a novel, it's that first moment where you get a peek at, oh, this might be what this book's about. Mm. I don't know. I feel like that's the kind of feeling of that moment sometimes. It's like, oh, this is going to be important. When I'm reading a book, that's when I get hooked into the story. So it's kind of like that for me, discovering that tarot and oracle were a thing that other people were interested in too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, I wanted to ask you, like you mentioned, you created this oracle deck like really early on, right?
Right.
And I think it's really fascinating because I remember when I started getting into divination, it was in the form of like the, what do you call these things? The paper fortune teller.
Oh, we totally had those. And I was the only kid in the group who took them really seriously.
That's a sign.
I think so. The fact that I was serious at all beyond like, I don't know. I don't know how old I would have been then, but I was very certain that there was something really magic there. I was like taking them apart to figure out if people had, you know, manipulated the results somehow. That's the kid I was.
Yeah. So yeah, I remember playing with those, and I had the like the eraser with yes and no written on each side, and you throw it in the air and you'd ask questions.
Oh yeah.
Like that was the divination I was using. And meanwhile, you've created this whole like, like I'm creating this whole oracle deck.
Creating an
like,
oracle system
whole
here.
System.
Yeah.
I think that's really amazing. But what do you think, like, do you have any kind of feeling around, you know, why that is? Do you feel like you have done this in past lives, or do you think it's just something that's within all of us? Like, what's your kind of thought on that?
I mean, honestly, I was thinking about it a little earlier today, actually, and my working theory, and I was raised like pretty in kind of a science household, but very encouraged to explore whatever I was drawn to. My working theory for everything is that we all have had lives somewhere before. Maybe a lot of them, maybe not many. And I think we all just come here remembering different amounts or different, you know, levels of things. And I always say, like, I don't think my memory blur really worked. I always felt like there were things I knew that I couldn't know, or that I didn't realize other people didn't know. That was more of it for me. I do feel like I've been probably some kind of reader of, you know, cards or something in past lives. For me, it was less I came to remember this, and more that I realized, oh, maybe it isn't like completely typical for me to remember this. When I was little, I always thought divination was just, it was just something that made sense to me. So my best guess is, you know, past lives doing this, or maybe just a memory from a world or a life where this was very typical. And, you know, just, it always feels like it always feels to me like divination is something that could be or can be very everyday, very part of your routine. The thing that seems notable or strange to me is when it's, you know, like taboo or something. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally. I always think it's really interesting how, you know, certain religions are like totally against divination. But, you know, when you look at, like, you read the Old Testament, they're doing divination all the time.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh,
it's
like cast some luck.
This is kind of everywhere. So, yeah, it's, and it's been interesting. I don't know, this whole incarnation has been really interesting with how the view on divination has changed just so much in my own life, like my own lifespan. It feels like it's just changed the general, like, social view on it, at least where I am, is very different from when I was growing up. And I'm actually kind of hopeful in that way, for people growing up now who maybe, you know, are interested in such, and like maybe hopefully don't have to be as, you know, nervous about it or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's like so many pros and cons to what's happening
right
now.
Oh yeah.
But that is definitely a pro though, that, you know, it's kind of, it's so much more kind of normalized now than it was when I was growing up. Like, you know, I went to this one little witchy shop to choose between these three decks, and now you go on Amazon and it's like there's a deck on everything.
Like, right. Yeah. And then like the cynic in me goes to, well, is this, you know, too much overexposure of all this? And and I'm always kind of like, maybe, but at the same time, I see all the cool, like, I've seen so many cool decks that people have created in the past 5, 10, 15 years that I just feel like I never would have seen before. And honestly, like, the artist in me is just happy that deck gets to exist. And at the end of the day, I kind of go like, would I rather have, you know, access to hundreds or thousands of decks, or would I rather have like three? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of come to, but I definitely have a lot more thoughts and opinions.
Yeah. I sometimes think that as a deck creator, and maybe you have some thoughts on this too, like, you know, are there already enough decks in the world?
Right.
And I had a friend say to me, I was actually talking about my fiction writing, and I said to her, you know, I feel like maybe there's just enough books and maybe I don't need to write one. Like, maybe, you know, maybe no one's interested in my book because there's like enough books. And she said, there can never be enough books.
Yeah.
And I was like,
definitely,
okay, yeah,
on
I need
books,
to hear that.
I love that. I love that. There can never be enough books.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously.
So what are your thoughts on that? Like, as a deck creator?
Yeah.
Are there enough?
It's tricky. I definitely have kind of grappled with that with my own deck creating, because I have added three to the pool of decks in the world. And even when I was creating the first one, I thought, well, has it been done too much? Has it been done, like, is it enough already? And all I could think was, well, there are, you know, hundreds or thousands of decks that I have access to, theoretically, but the one that I'm imagining doesn't exist. And yet. And I kind of thought, well, maybe that's the deck that somebody needs. Maybe that's the deck that I need. And so I just kind of went ahead and went through a couple of years of painting and made the Millennial Mystic Tarot. And then the subsequent ones have kind of been under the same banner of, you know, maybe there are enough decks in terms of number, but if the deck that I'm thinking about creating turns out to be the one that somebody somewhere really needs, because I've had that experience where some deck or some book is what I need in that moment, I don't want to be the person who said, there's enough already, I'm just not gonna do it, not gonna risk it. I don't know. I don't want to put pressure on anyone, but also I feel very strongly that, you know, maybe the world needs not necessarily another deck, but maybe it needs that deck. Maybe someone needs your book, your whatever you're creating. Because I don't think all the creators of the books and decks that have helped me necessarily knew when they were making them how much they would help some people someday.
Yeah. And thank you so much for saying all of this, because as a creative, I'm just like, I really need to hear that sometimes.
I think we all do. And I think it's important to go ahead and say it, you know, and I don't think you ever really know necessarily the full reach of what you do as a creative. But I'll never forget, at some point, someone sent me a photo of their altar, and they actually had one of my decks and the guidebook on that altar. And I just was like, it was like this creative fangirl moment of just, this is, it's all worth it. All of it, all the stress, all the worry, all the whatever, it's all worth it. We're good.
Like someone has connected to
that
work in such a way that they want to put it in their most sacred space. Like, that's a pretty, pretty big deal.
That always spoke to me as just a, like, I felt like I could say to the universe, okay, we're even. I feel like the work is worth it now. And I know it's not like that, but it did feel really helpful for me.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, like, as a creator too, it's like you make these things, whether they're books or decks or whatever, artwork in different ways, and you put it out into the world, and you don't always know where it goes,
right,
or what happens.
Right. And it can
or...
be scary, but at the same time, you know, it's, I think being creative is kind of always that process of, do I risk, you know, opening my heart and sharing this with the whole world out there? And I still go back and forth on what I want to share and how much. If I'm totally honest, I'm still back and forth sometimes about even decks I've already published. I'm still like, do I really, should I have shared that? And, you know, you get some good and you get some pain, but it's, I've yet to prove it entirely not worth it. Like, I've yet to prove that it's not worth it. And I have had some really good moments. So far worth it.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I'm one of those people who, you know, when you sent me the Magdalene Oracle, like, I opened that up and I just had such a, like, a strong reaction to it, like a positive, positive reaction, not like, I have a reaction to this.
Right.
But I just, you know, I was looking through it and I could just kind of feel the energy, you know, and I just felt really, like, tuned into it. And like, I have a lot of decks and not every deck makes me feel like that, which is fine, because all, you know, all decks have a different
purpose, right,
and they come into your life for a different reason, but I just like, I just really felt it.
Wow, you know? So, thank you.
Yeah. And I've like, I've looked at a couple of other, you know, similar decks in the way that they're like, you know, similar kind of subject
matter
that haven't kind of felt like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew going into it, there were a couple of other, like, even similar in name, like, Magdalene-themed decks. And, you know, I did research and I got a couple of other decks. And some of them I love, actually, and have a whole journey with on the other side of, like, that. But I felt like there wasn't the Magdalene deck that I wanted to create out there yet. And besides all of that, it was a journey I'd been going on myself. I didn't really start this deck thinking, you know, this is something I'm passionate about, I'm going to make this an oracle deck. It was more, I found myself doing this work and at some point was painting the Magdalene and just realized, oh, this is a deck, if that makes any sense. Like, I was doing work on recovery after a trauma, and I was also interested in the Magdalene mythos, because I felt like every time that I heard reference to the Magdalene or Mary Magdalene, there was a different story, and I loved that. And I was like, what is going on here that there's so many different stories about this one phrase? And I don't know, I started this path of researching and meditation and healing work, and wound up really far into the work before I realized that I kind of realized the purpose of it partly was to create this deck. It was like I had been almost led into this work before I was told, by the way, you're researching and preparing to create an oracle deck out of this.
Yeah.
I don't know how that, I make no claim to know how or why it happened. It just all kind of did. And I remember I was just painting one day and just painting the Magdalene, because when I am doing work with a deity or an archetype, I'm an artist, like at a very deep level of who I am. So I'm often drawing or painting just to explore that idea. Mm-hmm. It's part of my process of understanding anything, is to draw it. If I have to build something, I'm probably going to draw a diagram first. It's like how I understand things. So I was painting portraits of how I perceived the Magdalene and things that came to me in that work. And a lot of those have ended up as images in the deck. It's just, like I could probably trace back some of when I early on when I started thinking about planning the deck, but for me that wasn't really early in the process. It was like, mm-hmm. it was like later realizing, oh, this is going to be a deck. I better like come up with a card list and stuff.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And like one thing that I really love too about the deck is, you know, sometimes when people speak about Mary Magdalene, they share from the perspective of, well, I think Mary Magdalene is mm-hmm. this person. You know, like some people say, well, she was a priestess of Isis, and some people say she was mm-hmm. a prostitute. And then some people get really angry about that, and they're like, no, she wasn't right. a prostitute. And there's like right. this whole thing that's going on, you mm-hmm. know, like you said, all these different myths. And what I love about the deck that you've created is you've put all of that in there.
Yeah.
And I think that's really beautiful and really powerful.
Thank you. Yeah, I felt like as I was getting to know kind of the Magdalene energy, I started to think, wow, this is like, it's like this being is like a walking contradiction. And somehow this thought came to me of, well, why is that a bad thing? Why can't that be exactly what she is? And I just kind of ran with that, because it not only did it allow for more diversity in the imagery and how I portrayed her, but also it was just more interesting to me than the idea of finding the real story, like a singular, linear, this is the actual truth about Mary Magdalene. I kind of joke sometimes, and I'm not really joking, that I'm not a fan of like finding singular truth answers. I really like sacred mystery. I really like the idea of things we can't know. Not to say that I'm not for seeking answers. It's just, I think sometimes we seek for answers and we think we failed when we don't find something, you know, solid that makes sense. And maybe we found exactly what we're meant to find anyway. So yeah, so I've loved drawing on like a lot of different aspects of Magdalene mythos in creating the deck. And it just felt a little more true to her to me. To me, a lot of the Magdalene path and a lot of the archetype is kind of the, oh, what's the word? Sorry. The It's on one of the cards. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
It's all good.
Hang on.
I have the deck here.
Reconciliation. Reconciliation is the word I was searching for. I just think she's a lot about reconciling opposites and dualities and things that we think can't coexist, except to me, the Magdalene is the one who kind of nods and says, no, actually, those two things can maybe both be true. Maybe these opposites are not quite as polarized as you think. I don't know. That's how I've perceived her, is this being of reconciliation, of opposing anything. You know, it's this bringing together of anything. I don't know. It's really hard to put into words, but it's a powerful thing when you work with that energy, because I think so much of my, like, internal life has been fighting with the idea that, well, I have to make these things make sense, and I have to choose between these things, and I have to be this or this, and it's very either or. And bringing in the Magdalene energy has allowed me to really find, like, my happy place in gray areas and liminal spaces and all that stuff we love, but also in a very practical way. You know, I think we all spend a lot of energy trying to decide between things that aren't necessarily either or situations. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like, you know, we can tie ourselves up in knots trying to figure out, well, who exactly was Mary Magdalene, and which ones right. of these myths are truth and which ones aren't truth. And it's like, well, we're never going to know.
Right.
So, you right, know, like, enjoy the process of not knowing.
Yes. That, I think, enjoy the process of not knowing is, I need that on a t-shirt at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something I really enjoyed with Mary Magdalene. And as I was doing that research, sometimes I would find myself thinking, like, well, this can't be right over here because it contradicts this over here. And bringing in that Magdalene, like, thought process around it made it more of, well, maybe they're both true in different ways, true in different dimensions, true in different timelines. It's like, just because they can't both totally factually coexist doesn't mean they're not both helpful.
Yeah, yeah. I feel that so deeply too, because I think, I mean, there's so many different stories about Mary Magdalene, but
right.
I'm really interested in this idea that, well, she was a priestess of Isis and she was a prostitute, or she was a prostitute.
Right.
And people, I see people, like, fight about this all the time in the spiritual
community. Oh, yeah.
And one thing I find is really interesting is how upset people get when someone says, oh, she was a prostitute. And it's like,
right.
Well, what's wrong with that anyway, if that is what her right. story is? And it's like, right. you know, what are our biases? And it's like, oh no, she was this yeah. priestess. She could never have been a prostitute. And it's like, well, maybe she was both, like, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Who
knows? And I mean, looking at, you know, those sides of some of the myths, that it's one thing I really do appreciate about the Magdalene, like, mythos, is that it does touch on a lot of things that are really dear to people's hearts, or really not dear.
Yeah. Yeah. Early the on, uncomfortable stuff.
Yeah, yeah, the uncomfortable stuff. And I mean, when I started out researching or learning about Mary Magdalene, I was super nervous about the idea that she, I didn't want to work with, I actually started out not wanting to work with her at all. And found myself kind of challenged to, you know, well, maybe I should find out, like, more before I just say, I'm not going to work with this entity or this energy. And I remember one of the things that made me nervous early on was that just the idea of her as a saint or goddess or deity of, like, sacred sexuality, I was like, already I'm, you know, I'm going, I can't go there. I'm, you know, my personal history healing is over here and my spiritual path is over here. And I'm just not going anywhere. I'm not comfortable. And as much as I really encourage everyone to just go where you're comfortable, like when it feels safe to you, at the same time for myself, like allowing some crossover, like allowing myself to explore spiritually the things I was healing from, like that made it so much more powerful in both parts of my life. Like I don't think my healing process really would have progressed until I let there be a spiritual aspect to it. And it also really deepened my spiritual practice. It wound up being the best thing I could have done for both parts of my journey. It was, you know, it's not always been easy work. A lot of my Magdalene path has been like crying on the kitchen floor. And I'm very much a supporter of crying on the kitchen floor when you need to. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes that's the most spiritual thing we can do is break down crying. I'm a fan, not a fan, but like, I think too often we think that spiritual work or processes have to be all really beautiful, serene work sitting at an altar. And I think I've made as much spiritual progress there. Easily I've made that much or more crying on the floor somewhere.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's just where it takes us and where we go through. And this deck has been a process for me. But it being my third deck, I feel like I knew a little more what I was doing, even though it was such a different process. I don't know. It's been an incredible process, honestly, creating this deck. It's just, there's also been, you know, crying on the floor sometimes.
Yeah. I think most creatives will say, you know, whatever they're creating, there's been those moments.
I would think so. I feel like I could make a meme that I don't know if like everybody would get it, but it could just say, if you didn't cry on the floor at least once in your studio, did you really make a deck?
I love that.
It'd be kind of funny. You have to send that to some friends or something, but yeah.
I can relate to that. Definitely.
Yeah. There's definitely painful parts and messy parts to going through any creative process. And it's just, in my experience, it's just part of it. And it's just, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I've found some beauty in those crying on the floor moments. And I think the deck wouldn't be here if it weren't for it. And it wouldn't have the depth, I don't think, if there hadn't been some struggle as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, like one of the things that I love about the deck as well is the guidebook, like the writing, like what you've written to go along with it. You know, like the deck is great. People can get the deck, work with it, and have their own like incredible experiences with the energy of it. But there's so much in the guidebook. Like when I started going through it, I was like, this is like a, like, it feels like it's just a, and I know it's not like massive into, you know, it's not like 500 pages long or something, but it feels like there's just, you know, so much in it.
It's a full guidebook. And honestly, I loved writing that guidebook. I've had a range of experiences writing the guidebooks for my decks, and this one was just, I actually wrote the guidebook after I'd done most of the illustrations, I think, or at least a good number of them were already done. And I definitely had all the card lists and everything figured out, and it was really just filling in, writing about and writing down the process I'd gone through. And for each for each card, there's information on that card particularly, but there's also, a big section on just what is the Magdalen, as I've experienced working with the Magdalen, being a Magdalen, the Magdalen path and all that. And I just really loved the process of writing that. I wrote it all in about a month. And it was, I remember just, I would go to this one single Starbucks and sit and write. And I only had, a little bit of time in my week to do that, but I would go and I would write. And there was just must have been really good energy in that Starbucks, because it was a really pleasant experience writing that.
I would love for you to share a little bit with us about what you feel this means. There might be some people listening who are interested in Mary Magdalene. I'm sure people probably wouldn't have pressed play if they weren't interested in Mary Magdalene on this one.
Yeah.
But for people who haven't heard these terms, the Magdalene path, being a Magdalene, like, what does this mean?
Right.
And how is this different from, there's Mary Magdalene and then there's like the Magdalene and being a Magdalene.
Right. So I have to say, everything that I'm going to say is just from my limited experience and my limited research. Everyone is encouraged to do their own deep dives, but the Magdalene energy is, to me, the energy around the archetype that we most commonly here referred to as Mary Magdalene. So just kind of like, Mary Magdalene is a, by various accounts, she was a follower or disciple or apostle of Jesus or his wife or a dear friend or a woman he saved from sin or some combination thereof. She is sometimes said to have been his lover or wife, mother of his child, Sarah, possibly. There's so many different stories. And this is what I love about the Magdalene, is this kaleidoscopic range of things. But it has also been said that she was she had been a prostitute, or that some people say that she was possibly had been fleeing from an abusive relationship and was labeled a prostitute because she dared to escape or leave that relationship. I've also heard the theory that maybe she was just such a social rebel, hung out with Jesus and a bunch of guys, and was just labeled a prostitute out of, well, she's not behaving according to social norms, so this is what we're going to call her, or this is how we're going to translate it later. You can read all that you'd like on the translation discussion. But to me, on a broader scale, the Magdalene is the energy at the heart of, to me, the soul of the synthesis of all those Magdalene stories. I feel like in all of them, or in a lot of them, she was a powerfully different, rebellious, fiery energy, but she wasn't in like some, she wasn't necessarily rebellious in a violent way. She was, in a way, subversive, but in a really, I think, cool way. There's so many ways to look at her and at the Magdalene energy, but to me, it is an alternate path of reconciling opposing forces instead of by having one side win. It's bringing opposing ideals together. And I could go on and on and on, because the Magdalene really is a lot of things to me. But to me, the path of the Magdalene is, or being a Magdalene, and those can be different or similar or connected. it's taking on that sacred role of helping to reconcile things that are out of alignment but might actually need each other. In a very broad sense, I actually really feel like a lot of the Magdalene path is reconciling divine masculine and divine feminine. Just personally, that's been how it's kind of appeared to me. And not necessarily reconciling men and women, as we all know that can, the breakdown is not quite that simple. But symbolically to me, a lot of her stories, a lot of the Mary Magdalene stories speak to this sort of gently subversive, peacefully rebellious, you know, these contradictory words that boil down to stepping into our role as healers, if that's what we're drawn to do. And I really think living the healing, not necessarily going out and fixing, you know, singular, easily defined things, but maybe living the healing in yourself or living the healing in relationships that you have. I really feel underqualified to explain it, but it can be seen as a role that you might take on. It can be an identity that you feel you have. It can be, in a way, a title for some of the work you do. And it's, I have to mention, you did a kit on Mary Magdalene. Are your kits still available on your website?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're all up.
Okay, so I did the Mary Magdalene kit, and that was actually what kind of dragged me into addressing my nervousness and then absolutely falling in love with the Magdalene energy. And I love what you said in that kit. It was something like that is something that you, the Magdalene path is something that you may only realize you're on after you've been walking it some. And maybe I'm just totally misremembering, but I loved what you had to say in that kit on the Magdalene path and what it can mean. Because it, like, you know, like the Magdalene, it can mean so many things to so many people. But for me personally, it's kind of a subset of being a healing force in this world. I don't want to say force, but a being who's on a journey to do some healing internally and externally. If you want to make it like really general.
Yeah, I love that so much, and you speak so beautifully about all of these things, you know, the Mary Magdalene, the Magdalene path, the Magdalene journey, identifying as a Magdalene. And one thing I think is so beautiful about this path is there isn't really a definition. So for me to ask you right. for one is kind of like,
I kind of panicked. Like, I can't fit all of the definitions yeah. into an hour, let alone.
Yeah. Of course. But no, I feel but... like what you shared really, like, you know, touches on the essence of it. So yeah, you know, for those people who feel like, you know, they resonate with that in some way, it's like, you know, yeah. go on your journey and see what it is for you.
Yeah. That's what I've found most of all. It's that it's a very, not necessarily internal, but a very personal journey. For some people, it manifests as external work or processes or experiences you go through. For some people, it's like just realizing you're on this path and, oh, there's a word for it. And yeah. for me, it was really daring to go inward and realize that the answers were in here. And I just had spent so long looking elsewhere. You know, and I'm someone who, you know, like I mentioned, I will go to the library, I will go to the bookstore, I will search everywhere, but sometimes it takes a spiritual experience to make me kind of look inward and go, oh, maybe I really do have to find the answers within, and maybe that's not just like some saying.
Yeah, it's not just an Instagram quote. There's like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Actually going within, that's been where I've kind of found my answers.
Oh my goodness. I feel like we could talk about this all day.
Definitely could.
I feel like I say that on every podcast. It's like, oh, I love talking about all of this stuff so much.
Me too. Me too.
And yeah, I absolutely love your deck. And a lot of people will be listening to this just on the audio, but just while we finish up, I just want to show the deck for those who are watching it on video. And if you're listening to this on audio, pop over to the YouTube channel and you can see a video there. Otherwise, Taylor is about to tell you, while I show you some cards, where you can get the deck from, how you can follow her, and all of the other information so that people can connect with you, Taylor, because you're amazing. And I want everyone to know you, because I just think that you're such a, like, how do I say this? I just think you're such a beautiful being, and you have such a, like, a really beautiful heart. And I just want everyone to get to know you.
Thank you. Yeah. So, you can find me on Instagram at taylorjohnson.art. My website is kind of the same thing, http://taylorjohnson.art. There is no .com, just .art. You can find this deck on my storefront on my printer's website. I believe that URL is makeplayingcards.com/sell/September Moon Tarot. And you can pick up that deck, or I have my past two, the Millennial Mystic and the Hecate Oracle on there as well. The deck is 44 cards plus the two info cards, and it's like Vic said, you can see it on screen if you're watching this on the YouTube, and if not, pop over to the YouTube, because she did a really cool flip through and like early tour of it that absolutely made me fangirl out when I saw it. I've had a few people do flip throughs of my decks, and it just brings me such joy. It's like, it's exciting to see a deck when you get it in your own hands, but it is somehow like another like 5D version of that feeling when you see someone else flipping through it. It's like, oh my gosh, this thing is really out in the world. It's been an incredible experience, and I'm really honored that I got to share it with you all and with Vix.
I'm so glad you created it. And one thing that we haven't even mentioned that's one of my favorite things about this deck as well is that it's so inclusive. And there's...
I really, really believe in diversity in decks. As much as is possible, I want as many people as possible to find themselves in my decks. And it's not always logistically an easy thing to do, but I really believe in it. I've known too many people, and myself in some ways, who have not found ourselves in media. And I think finding yourself in whatever you love is just a really beautiful thing. So I try and make my, whatever I can of my content as diverse as possible, just because I think that moment when you find yourself in something that someone else has created, it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I am obviously a massive fan of yours. I'm a massive fan of this deck. So I encourage everyone to go and check it out. Thank you so much, Taylor, for being here. I will post all of Taylor's links in the show notes or in the comments. So do go and check out Taylor's work and check out this amazing oracle. Thank you so much for being here, Taylor, and thanks everyone for watching. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to New Age Hipster Radio. For more good vibes and spiritual goodness, head to newagehipster.co. Thanks for listening and peace out.